This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Welcome, everyone, to yet another episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Fonsla, and that's right, shop smart, shop S smart. Got that? That and more after a word from our sponsors, Napa Auto Tech Training and Pico Technology. Do you have a general service tech that you want to grow into your business, but you're lacking the path to get them there? Let Napa Auto Tech's apprentice program pave the way. Go to NapaAutoTech.com for more details. Tired of guesswork in your auto diagnostics? Need to pinpoint faults quickly and accurately? Picoscope will turn your PC into a powerful diagnostic tool. See live waveforms from sensors, injectors, and ignition systems. See the problem? Solve it faster. Visit PicoAuto.com. That's PicoAuto.com. I guess a member of a Facebook group that's centered around the town where the shop's located, Red Wing. There's a lot of chatter in there, all kinds of different stuff. People complaining about things, reporting things, really good deed type things where, you know, somebody's following somebody's vehicle and they lost something and, you know, they put the message out on there, pictures of the items, whatever it may be, found someone's driver's license or credit card laying in a parking lot, you know, and alerting people that they found it and return, you know, brought it into the store or wherever. There's a spectrum of things that go on in the group. But one thing that I've noticed as of late is lots and lots and lots of people inquiring about where is the best place to have work done, like what maybe a car repair, or who's best bang for the buck to install a water heater, or who do you recommend that's not expensive or economical to put a window in. Just wide variety, but continuing theme of less money, less money. And then, you know, you get the comments, right? Recommendations. So-and-so is wonderful. So-and-so is terrific. So-and-so is expensive. Stay away from this place. Someone recommends one place. Somebody comes in underneath, like, I will never do that again. I'll never use them again, whatever. But the theme of inexpensive keeps coming up over and over. Or what's the most reasonable? What's the most affordable? And I was going to try to comment on each individual question. It got to the point where it no longer seemed reasonable to make these great big replies. Not that they would have to be great big, but whatever. I end up writing novels. I guess I really try to complete thoughts and try to support them with some sort of reference material, be it, you know, what an expert says, or that there's data available, that there's an underlying theory of some sort. So things get wordy. I thought it might be interesting to read what I wrote on the podcast and kind of open that up for comment. And also, hopefully I can add a little bit more to it at the end. So if you bear with me, I'm going to try to read this. I'm very curious what you think. Also, I think I can add more to it just for conversation's sake and really focus it more on auto repair or our day-to-days. So here we go. I've been seeing quite a few questions and comments on goods and services that mention reasonable. So I have quote unquote reasonable and quote unquote affordable. I've been working on responses for a few days, but I felt that maybe a direct post is more appropriate. People are not wrong to care about price. Those feelings are real, and in a lot of households, the margin for error is thin, or most certainly thinning. The problem is that when these feelings drive virtually every decision, the long-term consequences are invisible until they are painful and hard to reverse. Economically, every purchase has two prices, the number on the invoice and the impact on the system you live inside. Economics and ecosystems share some meanings. Local independent businesses tend to keep much more of each dollar circulating nearby. Wages, local suppliers, services, sponsorships, and taxes. While dollars spent outside with distant companies and businesses leak out to centralized operations or just their communities. The local multiplier effect means that when someone chooses a potentially and sometimes actually higher price locally, they are effectively buying extra local jobs, local stability, and local options for their future selves and their neighbors, not just a product or service in the moment. I also can't help but mention that folks who seek lower prices and go elsewhere often find out that long term, they've spent more, or they were lured in with a lower price, only to find out that when they go to pay, it's the same or more than they would have paid locally. In the world of auto repair, when warranty concerns arise, you must travel to get those concerns addressed, costing time, by far our most valuable asset, or you find out why the prices were much lower to begin with. Behavioral economics and game theory have spent decades showing that humans are biased towards the immediate, the discount now, the convenience now, the small relief now. Concepts like hyperbolic discounting, loss leaders, and loss aversion describe how short-term feelings regularly overpower long-term interests, even when people know better in the abstract. The pain here is that the emotional relief of I save some money today is very vivid, while the cost of my town has fewer skilled trades, fewer independent businesses, shops, restaurants, service providers, etc., and fewer resources is abstract, until it isn't. A need or want surfaces and there's no one nearby you trust to help, or that business that once was located downtown had to close, and there are no local options, plural, or a single option, if any at all. From a game theory perspective, the relationship between residents and local businesses behaves a lot like a repeated prisoner's dilemma, where each individual is tempted to defect, chase the lowest price elsewhere, namely non-locally, because the downside of a single defection seems negligible. But when many people do the same, the collectively rational equilibrium shifts towards fewer local options and more dependence on larger players who have no stake in the community other than profit, or who display the worst parts of trickle-down economics or simply no local options. That becomes troubling, at least to me, when we used to have one or more local options. Choosing to cooperate by supporting local businesses, even when it requires a sacrifice, is a strategic move to maintain a wider, richer, more resilient set of options for everyone, including your future self. That was the end of that. And even reading it there, I stand by that because I maybe oversimplified some of it with, you know, the price at the invoice. There's two of one, the price coming out of your pocket, but it's also the investment in the community. That's maybe a little oversimplified, but it's fundamentally true, right? I think we've all seen the meme or I guess a poster or something like that, that maybe a local small business puts up by the front counter where there's a frustration with you'll go elsewhere. Like by elsewhere, I think I mean outside of town, like away, which I guess is relative depending on where you live, because some of you guys drive a half an hour to go like three blocks. Half an hour for me is almost 30 miles away. You'll drive 30 miles away to save however much money. And then when your kid needs fundraising money, you're at my front counter asking. I truly believe that that is a failure, really, on adults. Like it's easy to just point fingers at education systems and all that, but at some point we kind of got to try to educate ourselves, right? And being able to think that through of my money going to that business owner most likely isn't going to a mansion, most likely isn't going into the fourth or the third car, the sports car, most likely isn't going to another, you know, a cabin, most likely. It's probably going into one of their employees' hands. It's also going into the improvement of the business, the expansion of the business, which means hopefully more jobs, especially in, I think, our profession and most of the skilled professions, electricians, plumbers, etc. I think we're running in the same lines as them. I think everybody's heard my take on that, where we should be running in the same line as them, or even, you know, for lack of a better term, above. And I don't mean that so much condescendingly. It's just we have a variance and complexity that they don't. And that's the reality of it. However, the other reality is what they're working on, houses, buildings, businesses, stuff like that, have a value much higher than what we're working on and maintain or increase value over time, where I think almost all the stuff we work on almost decreases in value and rapidly. That's a big hurdle that unfortunately has us running in more closer lines with appliance repairmen, TV repairmen than the other skilled professions. NAPA Auto Tech training sessions are being conducted day and night in a town near you. This training caters to every level within your organization, be it a mechanical assistant, a mechanical specialist, a technology specialist, or a driver safety calibration specialist. Imagine a one-stop shop training partner in NAPA Auto Tech that will lead your team to a path to greatness. Auto Tech's entry-level Build a Tech classes convert the untapped potential of your new hires into money-making mechanical specialists. Auto Tech's higher-level tech update classes introduce specialists to the world of ever-changing technologies, which prevents your shop from getting technologically stagnant. Remember, if you're not moving forward, you're falling behind. And, turning to the front of the store, the Auto Tech Service Advisor class is an awesome way to hone your client advocate skill set, ultimately benefiting the customer through an improved vehicle repair experience. But it doesn't stop there. Imagine an electric vehicle class that takes your specialist well past the mundane, yet necessary, safety topics. Well, it's here. Auto Tech's EV Ready Training is a week-long curriculum that takes participants through a hands-on experience involving hybrids and electric vehicles. The session kicks off with the use of PPE and proper tooling while touching on required OSHA regulations. Then, the students dive into the lab vehicles to gain knowledge of the common high-voltage components on EV and hybrid vehicles and their function. Attendees will be taken on a path exposing them to different electric vehicle manufacturers to compare component form and location. Additionally, information about Level 1 and Level 2 charging systems will be included, along with a quick look at DC to DC charging. The operation and maintenance of subsystems are explored, including the different modes of Tesla operations, and so much more. So what are you waiting for? Commit to taking your business to the next level with NAPA Auto Tech Training. Is your shop ready for the electric vehicle revolution? Don't get left behind. The Picoscope EV Kit is your all-in-one solution. Diagnose any electric or hybrid vehicle, from high-voltage batteries to complex communication systems. With guided tests and pinpoint accuracy, you'll tackle more jobs and boost your bottom line. This isn't just a tool. It's your future. Be the expert in EV repair. Visit PicoAuto.com to future-proof your shop today. That's PicoAuto.com. So I guess where I was heading with that is, if you're spending money with a small business, especially a skilled profession like ours, that money, if it goes to expanding the business or taking care of employees, usually means like career level incomes, usually, right? I hope that's what we're mostly doing, is these are jobs that pay people to live. Good's a really strange word, I suppose. Middle class, upper middle class life, or at least the potential to do so. I think that's kind of where we're at. It's not like some other entities predicated on, don't get me wrong, like some of it isn't fundamentally bad. It has to do with skill sets and all that. But certain entities are never going to have that many people making career level wages, right? It's just not the way it's going to be. In some cases, understandably so. Spending money with our establishments usually means more people living better lives, or, you know, expanding it so we can hire more people, or taking care of our people better so that when whoever fundraiser, as an example, comes in, instead of just the business maybe participating, everybody in the business is participating to some degree. And when you're in that kind of that middle class, lower middle class, upper middle class, the kind of that range, whatever money you make is usually getting spent. A large percentage of it is getting spent locally. If you can afford to shop locally, usually you do. And those of us involved in small businesses, especially where we kind of understand the ins and the outs, and maybe that's a sales pitch to you if you're in management, is educate your people on how the business works. Start talking numbers. And I don't mean just their production and all that, or showing them your bank account. I mean how it works, that they better appreciate what it takes to run a small business. Therefore, they may be more apt to support local small businesses. I mean, I don't know. I could be wrong. Maybe most likely I'm wrong, but I feel like around COVID, post-COVID, with stimulus packages and along with just certain economic things that were going to happen because of the hunker down type of mentality we had where travel plummeted, stuff like that. People started to have expendable incomes. To me, other than restaurants got shafted hard, but a lot of businesses got really nice kick in the butt because people had money to spend. And I think that's proof that if you can keep your money local and help those entities that will employ people to be able to afford to live and shop locally, it is a very circle of life type of a thing where we're all helping each other. The redistribution of funds happens locally in a very sound economic means or manner. I guess I kind of wanted to read that off to you, see what you thought of it, kind of make my pitch that we should be educating our people on just the kind of the ins and outs of a business, like what makes it run. Profit's not evil. I do believe in ethical profit, although you would never teach an economics class talking about ethics other than, and I guess by definition of it is, you do what you say you're going to do for what you said you're going to do it for. We're not lying. But I also think there's more to that. And maybe that's more to do with everyone's individual moral compass. But I think there's usually pretty good guardrails most of us would follow. I think so. But educate, and hopefully they then become more empathetic, sympathetic, understanding, compassionate for not only the business that they're working in, but all the other small businesses. When I go to a small business and I don't have cash and I'm buying something and I use my card, if they're not charging a fee, I ask them to add a fee or offer to pay extra. Not because I'm so freaking smart or because, you know, I'm just so business savvy. I am compassionate towards that. I understand that it costs them to swipe my card. Therefore, I feel that cost that should fall on me. That should be my responsibility, not theirs. They may not accept that. That's on them. But I offer it. I offer it because I know about it. I think if we educate our people on how businesses run and what they need, they too become more compassionate. And not saying they're just going to offer to pay swipe fees, but that'd be one thing amongst others, as well as that little grocery store understanding whatever the ingredients are, whatever the food items are. Yeah, they're probably more expensive than the big box chains. But long term, how expensive do your food costs get when that little grocery store that's a couple blocks away goes under because nobody supported it? And now you are obligated. You have to drive miles away now to go get a few ingredients. Hope you got a kick out of that or see where I'm coming from on that. I'd love to hear what you have to say about what I wrote on that group and what I guess a lot of the stuff I've said here. So please don't hesitate to fire email at me at mattfonzlepodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you haven't checked out the Automotive Repair Podcast Network app, we have an app now that you can listen to all the podcasts on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network, including this one, Carm's Remarkable Results Radio Podcast, so many more. See what you think of that. Makes it maybe a little easier. You can listen to it on, you know, just listen to this stuff, not look at my ugly mug, or you can watch the videos all in the app and you can store them, favorite them, download them to listen offline. A lot of options. It's actually quite slick, and it took well over a year for them to get it developed the way they wanted. So I think the effort actually paid off. Check that out. And also, before I get off of here, please check out our sponsors, Napa Auto Tech Training and Pico Technology. Thank you to them for everything. And while I'm talking about the app, need to thank the Automotive Repair Podcast Network for making this all possible. So until next time, take care.
You've been listening to Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z with Matt Fonslow on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com, because the best conversations in the industry start here. Want Matt to cover a specific topic? Check the show notes for his email. Your input matters.